You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
To the journey.
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every week, is
Tristan Riddell.
And before we get started with our topic of the week, we have to acknowledge somebody. We have to talk about Leonard Nimoy. We just have to.
That's right. I mean, even though Leonard Nimoy, was not on Voyager in any way or capacity, he's still a Star Trek icon, and you and I are huge Star Trek fans, not just Voyager fans.
Right, yeah, never mind the fact that he was never on Voyager. Spock transcends all of the series. I mean, he was mentioned on Voyager.
That's right, yes, he was mentioned on Voyager, and there is the episode flashback where Tuvok actually served with Sulu during mm-hmm. a mission, like a very popular mission of Star Trek VI. And, but yeah, like even if that never happened, it wouldn't have mattered because, like you said, he just transcends all barriers within Star Trek.
Yeah. Now, I never had the good fortune of seeing Leonard Nimoy at a convention or anything like that. I mean, did you have an experience like that?
I'm glad that you asked that because I have so much regret because what happened is that his last appearance at a convention was supposed to be in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, like, this is going to be Leonard Nimoy's last personal event appearance or convention appearance. And I bought tickets and he was sick or something happened. He had to cancel that weekend. And then I can't remember if he came back, like he had one, like because he canceled, he scheduled one more appearance at another time. But I can't remember if it was in another place as well.
Okay.
But the thing is, though, is that the last convention that I was at, he did a Skype in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He kind of did this in the latter years when he officially, quote-unquote, retired from actually physically appearing at conventions.
Yeah, and he did that. And so I was able to go to one of those not too long ago. And that was a lot of fun. And, you know, all of us who are Star Trek fans who go to conventions, and I've only been to a few, there's certain people you meet who are really friendly, really personable, and mm-hmm. just really genuine. And then there's other people you meet who are just kind of like, yeah, okay. You know, like they're not like mean. They're not, you know, they're not disinterested. They're just kind of there, you know, like they sign it and say thanks and, you know, move on and everything like that.
Yeah, they've done hundreds, maybe thousands of these things, and it's just another day in the life for them.
Exactly. And I'm not complaining in the least about however you are, like as a celebrity in Star Trek when it comes to that. But with Nimoy, even though it was just Skype, he was so into it. He was so happy. Like, it was just, he was genuinely happy to be Skyping in and talking to us. Because that's the thing, is like, he didn't just answer questions, he actually talked to us.
Nice.
Like, people got up and asked questions, and he could see us, and we could see him. And he was laughing, he was smiling, he brought on his son to play a song.
Oh, nice.
Like, he went above and beyond. Like, he could have just turned on his computer and then said, hey, yes, no, you know, Spock's brain, blah, 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 you know, and then move on.
In that order.
Yeah, in that order. But like he was very engaged. He was just really happy. And it was just, it showed. I was so excited. Like, even though I didn't ask him a question, I was so happy to be there because you could tell he loves this franchise and he loves the fans. And when he asked all of us to consider him his grandfather, I mean, that was not a publicity stunt. That was because that's how he feels.
Yeah, you know, that's actually been kind of an interesting thing that's happened with a couple of the Star Trek actors is for a little while, I think, especially maybe in the 80s, the original cast, some of them, not all of them, kind of resented the idea that they were typecast in these roles. I mean, mm-hmm. I know, Leonard Nimoy wrote a book called I Am Not Spock, but then later came around and wrote another book called I Am Spock, and they kind of went full circle and learned to embrace the role rather than resent the fact that this is all that they were going to be known for. They realized, oh, you know what? This is not a bad thing at all. And so William Shatner kind of did a similar thing with, like, in The Captains, you see that moment, right, where he's talking with Patrick Stewart about it. And he's like, oh, you know what? That's actually a really cool thing. Thank you for helping me embrace that. Well, Leonard Nimoy kind of did the same thing. And I love the fact that you mentioned just how full of life he is and just how genuine that experience felt. That's so cool. And I really regret the fact that I'll never have the chance now to see that, because this is a huge loss for the Trek community. I mean, it's always been hard when we've lost one of the original cast members, but we didn't have things like Twitter or Facebook or Skype back when Jimmy Doohan died in 2005, and certainly not when DeForest Kelly was gone in 1999. This, I feel, is kind of like the first really big one that we are all kind of mourning together as a community.
Yes, I think you're right, because I like the way that you put that, because people we never knew and only knew from their work, you know, they pass all the time and it means something to us. And when I came onto Twitter, it was specifically for the Star Trek community. That was the sole and only reason why I signed on to Twitter and started talking with people. And I've said this before on the podcast, my first tweet was about Star Trek, and my last tweet is going to be about Star Trek. And like you said, it's like Leonard Nimoy is very, very much engaged on Twitter. And we have a lot of great Star Trek people on Twitter. Jonathan Frakes, J.R. Ryan, LeVar Burton, William Shatner. Does it mean we know these people even more? No. But it means that they're interacting with their community on a different level than what they were in the 90s. Like when you said, when DeForest Kelly and Doohan left when they passed, and
well, they left physically. Yes,
they left the surly bounds of this mortal coil, and so when you put it down, is that we're mourning as a community. I mean, like, the Star Trek community has always been close knit, but it's so much on a grander scale because we can share our thoughts and feelings instantly around the globe, not just with our friends that we can physically touch and hug, and with Leonard Nimoy being such a big presence and being the first to go with this this newfangled thing called social media, I think it's much more impactful because we're all collectively sharing that loss.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think instant is the key word there, because we have certainly mourned. Like, I remember there would always be a special issue of, say, Star Trek Communicator that would honor whoever we lost. Well, in this day and age, this already happened on Friday. The day that he passed. He passed that morning, and within minutes when the news broke, my Twitter stream was just ablaze. I couldn't scroll fast enough to read the amount of tweets that were coming in. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen such a huge thing happen instantaneously. I mean, my Friday was sucked dry with just scrolling through Twitter. There was no way I could get anything else done but to keep reading. I mean, it was captivating. We were all mourning at the same time. But then it was just, I don't know, living in the moment. That's what's so different about this social media, is it is instantaneous. It is right now. And we are all living it live.
You're absolutely right, because I had the same exact experience. I was going to not be on Twitter on Friday because of House of Cards. I signed out of social. I like deleted the Tumblr app and the Twitter app and the Instagram app from my phone.
Did you really?
Yes. Wow. So that I would not go on social media because I didn't want spoilers. But then Matt Hansen, my co-host on The Nerd Party, he sent me a link the moment it happened of an article of Leonard Nimoy's death, and I immediately went back on Twitter because I needed to see what my friends were doing. I needed to see what my friends were saying, and I actually posted video of my feed and how fast it was going.
Oh, it was insane, right? Yeah, and it's like, once you know that something like that is happening, you have to be there.
You have to be there. You have to be a part of it. You want to be a part of it, because this actor, this photographer, this poet meant something to you. His work meant something to you, and the man meant something to you. And so you wanted to share that with your friends. And it wasn't for selfish reasons. It was just because that person and his art meant so much to you and your community.
Right. It's not many people who, even though we didn't actually know him as him, we certainly were not friends. We didn't even know each other, but the fact that he meant so much to so many people, I think, says a lot about who he is and his body of work and how he presented himself as a person to all of us. That says a lot, and that is why the reaction was the way it was. You know, like big names, they pass every day. I mean, and Twitter breaks that too.
Yeah.
But I have not seen such an outpouring of support and grief and what have you as I think I have live with Leonard Nimoy, not even Robin Williams. And that was pretty big too. You know, as far as like a Trek community goes, we follow so many Trek fans that maybe that had something to do with it, certainly. But even the news outlets and whatnot, I mean, they're still producing content about Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, it's because, I mean, I think that was actually what I was going to chime in and say, is that we are in the Star Trek community, and so our feed is going to blow up a little bit more than someone who's in just a sports community or just a music community or something like that.
True.
But you are right, it is transcending, because all the news outlets, today especially for some reason on Sunday, I don't quite know why, at the time of this recording, are doing specials. Like Sunday Morning just did a special on Leonard Nimoy, and you see it on CBS, NBC, and Fox, and everywhere. Like, people are doing specials, like not just announcing but doing specials on Leonard Nimoy, and it just goes to show that he transcended the nerd genre and he has penetrated our pop culture so thoroughly that even when you're not a Star Trek fan, you know who Mr. Spock is, you know the live long and prosper symbol, you know what he's done for the zeitgeist. And it just, like, he's been in music video, like pop music videos,
he's been in documentaries,
he's been in commercials, he's all over the place. And now, especially since Nerd Chic is a thing, nerds are popular again, he became popular again.
I think we're gonna see a lot of people kind of discovering a lot of the lesser known aspects of his work for the first time. Things like his photography, things like his poetry. We might know about that because we are Star Trek fans, and therefore we've probably been exposed to his body of work more than other people. They're going to discover this for the first time, and he's a very accomplished artist in so many realms. And that's going to be fascinating to watch. Look at my choice of words. That is the impact of Spock right there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we could probably do a whole episode on Leonard Nimoy, but I think the whole network is going to be talking about Leonard Nimoy. And since we are a Voyager podcast, let's talk a little bit about Voyager. And this week's topic is a rewrite of the episode Collective. Do you want to give us a little recap on what happens in Collective?
Collective is the season 6, episode 16 story of Voyager, and it's about Tom, Neelix, Harry, and Chakotay. It starts off, they're playing poker in the Delta Flyer, and then they look up through the window and they see a Borg sphere. Holy crap, they get abducted, and Voyager finds out, they come to try and rescue them, and then they realize that they're not dealing with 5,000 drones, they're dealing with five kids. And something happened, there was some sort of pathogen that killed all the Borg on the cube, and they were protected because they were in maturation chambers. And so they came out early, they were underdeveloped, and so they tried to do the best that they could. They tried assimilations and botched them, and they wanted to reestablish a connection with the Borg, and so they demanded Voyager's deflector dish. And Voyager and crew were just like, yeah, we can't give it to you. Seven goes over there to try and fix their damaged systems. Then she finds out more about the kids and how unstable they actually are. Turns out that there's a baby infant that they have to save. And they have a lot of back and forth. And what happens was, there's one Borg kid who's really obnoxious, and he's just like, won't listen to Seven, but the other kids kind of do. And there's there's some sort of accident, and the bastard kid gets electrocuted. And then I'm not even talking about Icheb. Yeah. He dies, so we don't have to listen to his whiny voice ever again. And they take on the other four kids. And then they become part of the crew, and as you know who they are, they're the two twins, the little girl, and Icheb. And then they try to find their homes, and Seven is now their mentor, end of episode. So that is the episode. And Char, you and I said, we didn't really like this episode so much, so why don't we rewrite it? But the thing is, you and I have had a few problems with that, isn't that right?
Yeah, as this week is dragged on by, I think I watched the episode maybe Wednesday or Thursday night to try and make some notes like I usually do to, you know, establish my rewrite and get something flowing. I watched the episode and I'm thinking, you know, this is about the most useless episode ever. It doesn't have to exist at all. And I know it would be a complete cop-out if we just said, well, you know, let's just chuck it. And that's the end of the rewrite. And that's the end of the episode. We can't do that. That's too easy.
And also because of Icheb and the kids. I mean, they're on later on.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because I know you don't like Icheb at all.
I don't. But the thing, here's the thing. This is what's funny, is that I don't like Icheb at all. I really don't like his character. I don't like how he was portrayed. I just think he was a blight on Voyager. But the thing is, the most that I liked him was in this episode.
And well, maybe it's because of the annoying kid whom your sympathy for is just absolutely heartwarming. Maybe he overshadowed the fact that Icheb, well, maybe he overshadowed your hatred for Icheb.
I think that's what it was, is that this lead guy was so annoying and so just whiny and just fake leadership. And I know that's the point. I know that's I know that they portrayed him that way on purpose. I get it. But it was like there was this skit a long time ago on Robot Chicken where it was there inside the writer's room of TNG. Mm-hmm. And it's like Will Wheaton's character of Wesley is just not registering with the with our demographic. We need to do something. We need to do something drastic. And one guy's like, well, why don't we introduce an even more horrible character that makes him look awesome by comparison? And one guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now.
I kind of feel like this is what happened.
And that is, yeah, that is exactly what happened. And so, and then, so I feel like this is what happened, is that this character was so horrible that Icheb looked like a shining white knight by comparison, because he was sensitive, he listened to Seven, and he was a sympathetic character who kind of went against the grain. And, you know, almost practically saved the day. And I was like, great, let's hold on to that and then or get rid of him like three episodes later, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, because then it's all downhill from there, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And you know what? I've said in the past, oh, I don't mind the Borg kids, you know, kind of whatever, they were there, so be it. Yeah. But you know what? The more I watch this episode and the more I watch the episodes with the Borg kids, the more I hate them. And it's not just the fact that they're kids, it's the fact that they are completely useless.
I'm trying to think of what actually happened during the show to progress the plot of the kids, because the kids didn't actually do too much. They were the block between them and the hostages. That's it. They didn't actually do anything. They didn't, I think they did two things. They got the hostages. And then they tried to steal the deflector. That's pretty much it.
Well, they were in the haunting of Deck 12. So Neelix told them a ghost story.
I'm talking about in collective.
Sorry.
Like, I'm talking about the story structure where they did two things that mattered. And other than that, they were just annoying to Seven and Janeway.
Yeah, okay. I was talking more of Voyager as a whole. I mean, I'm thinking bigger picture. Okay. Really, I mean, obviously the most developed of them all is Icheb.
Right.
And they even gave him a whole episode.
And the twins didn't even have lines in collective. And for most of the series, they didn't even have lines.
Yeah, I mean, we barely got to know them at all. So what was the freaking point? So the more I watch this thing, I'm just thinking, yeah, seriously, I really would chuck it. I just would. But let's play by our typical rules and try and spin this thing into something better. Let's talk positively for just one second. And it might really be that long. Let's talk about what we liked in the episode. Was there anything at all that you liked in here?
Visually, I really enjoyed this episode. I felt like the special effects were top notch for the time. I felt like they gave us a few things that were a little bit more enhanced than what we normally see on Voyager and Star Trek in general. I feel like they really experiment, like around this time, like in 2000 and a couple years before. Around this time, they were really experimenting with what CGI ships could do and not just doing the basic flybys or the sitting there and firing phasers, because that's pretty much what Star Trek fighting was for all of TNG and most of DS9.
Yeah.
It was a ship sitting there firing phasers. But in this episode, you would see the Delta Flyer kind of like traverse a trench, like almost like in Star Wars, of the Borg cube and fire, and the camera would follow the Delta Flyer evading and like swooping around and everything like that. And it was just really cool to see because we don't normally get that kind of angle. And then we got to see the inside of the Borg cube, which is always fun. Not just the corridors, but like the hangar bay. And while they were going into, like when they got tractor beamed in, we don't normally see that. And
true. Yeah. That was new.
And it just like those kind of things I felt was really cool. And the look inside the cube, I thought it was a little bit brighter than we normally see. And I kind of like that because it showed us that something was wrong. You know, like it didn't look like a typical Borg cube because it didn't have 5,000 drones running around.
Right. So,
and I liked their costumes, their outfits. They looked a little bit like swimwear, but...
it was Borg swimwear.
It was Borg swimwear.
Borg Speedos.
But it kind of made sense because they're underdeveloped, you know, like it's not all, they're not all put together. So they had to show that in some fashion. And so I thought visually with the lighting, the production design, the costumes and the VFX, I thought it was very, very cool, very top notch. And I know that has nothing to do with the story, but that
hey,
was,
you know, what, we got to take what we can get here, I think.
How about you?
Well, I love the teaser. I think the teaser was the very best thing about this whole episode. And really, I would chuck the rest, but I would keep this. I love the idea of seeing poker again in Star Trek. It seems like you would have a lot of free time on an away mission. And it kind of seems natural that they would do something like play cards, play poker, what have you. I think the only other time we've really seen the instance of them playing cards on Voyager was Tuvok playing gin with... Uh-oh, help me out here. Was it Chakotay?
Tuvok playing gin?
He was playing gin. This was very early on, and I think they might have been trying to unveil the truth about Seska.
I
could be totally wrong about that. It happened. It truly happened. I swear to you, if you go back and watch your season one on Netflix or what have you, it is there.
It was in State of Flux.
Was it? Okay, thank you. See, I'm not totally full of it.
Yeah, I just looked it up real quick. Tuvok demonstrated that he was a skilled djinn player against Chakotay while waiting for a traitor to be discovered.
Okay, there we go. Boom. Hey, my memory does work sometimes.
I don't remember that in the least.
It's been a while for me, and it's a very minor detail, but I think that's the only other real instance that we've seen them playing cards. So anyway, bring back the poker game. That's kind of cool, and it's a nice little subtle homage to TNG, even, if you want to go that route. And also, visually, like you were saying, the whole idea of the Borg cube sneaking up on the shuttle, that was just cool. And the fact that they look back there and they're like, oh, and they have to jump back to, that was fantastic. That was great. Keep it.
The only thing that really bothers me about that moment, because everything you describe is really awesome, and also Neelix being a hustler, that's just adorable.
Well, of course, how else is he going to play it?
But the thing is that, like, this is always what bothers me about sci-fi, is that there are certain instances where ships pass each other very slowly for dramatic effect, and why on earth would the Delta Flyer be going at impulse if they're making their way home?
Conserving power? No.
Yeah. See, that's what really bothers me. I was like, why aren't they at warp? Oh, because they need to be caught by the Borg.
Yeah. Well, maybe Chakotay and Harry just really didn't want to get back to doing bridge duty yet again. And so maybe, like, let's just take this one slow.
Let's just take our time.
And then we'll maximize our time and play poker and have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally rationalizing the hell out of this. But... anyway, that is the one thing, honestly, that I would keep, and I would do a completely different story.
Do you want to get into the actual rewrite? Like, we've been putting it off for 25 minutes, so...
Yeah, let's get into the rewrite, because that's all the good I have to say about this episode, seriously. I would rewrite essentially the whole thing, and I would not make this a Borg story. I wouldn't even do that. I don't want these to be Borg kids, because this is the most non-threatening Borg story ever.
Okay. All right. So how would your story go? What would it be? Like, where would you start?
Well, okay. Starting with ditching the Borg. I mean, if the idea is to bring a group of kids on Voyager, they don't have to be Borg kids. And we also don't need to have that Borg baby that will never be seen again.
Okay, oh yeah, for those of you who don't remember, we see a Borg infant. Seven and the doc saves the Borg infant, and then it's never discussed again. And there was there's an interview with Brennan Braga, and they asked, "What happened to the baby?" And he said, he's like, "Oh, it was delivered to its people off screen. Like, we could have spent some time on it, but we wouldn't have spent some more time on the other kids." Bull crap. They forgot.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, they just did not care. And that is the biggest mystery of all time. What happened to the Borg baby? Well, let's just eradicate the baby from the equation altogether, and then we don't have this problem.
They straight up forgot. I know that they had to forgot, because it would have taken one line of, like, "Oh, thank goodness we found the baby's parents, and now we just have to find the parents of these other kids." Bam.
Yeah,
done.
No, that did not happen. Also, I don't really like the idea of Seven as a babysitter to these kids, and so if they're not Borg, that's not really her responsibility. It's going to become more of a community aspect where everybody on the ship kind of pitches in like they do with Naomi Wildman. And then, okay, so be it. So they're not Borg. What are they then, right? That's the inevitable question. Mm-hmm. Well, they're the alien species of the week, the forehead, the nose, whatever of the week. It doesn't matter. I figured the best way that I could spin this was to take the fact that these were kind of like undeveloped Borg kids and spin it into something maybe a little more that we can relate to. And I was going to have them be the defects of whatever race this is. This race abandons the children that have some sort of birth defect, or they're just, you know, genetically something is kind of wrong. Like, say they have our equivalent of Down syndrome or some kind of disability, but they are an elitist race and they don't believe in helping out those who are handicapped and need a little extra help, or, you know, they can't move fast enough to keep up and measure up. And so they just abandon them.
So kind of like the Spartans.
Yeah. So they, you know, they live on ship colonies. Well, this is the ship of abandoned kids, and they are left to fend for themselves. And most of the time, they just die because they don't know what else to do. They don't have the capacity. Well, for whatever reason, this group of kids survived. And you can have the same kids. Who cares? It's fine. And they are out there to try and prove that this is wrong. Look at us. We are able. We are not as defective as you think. And how dare you? We are mad at the way that you have treated us. And Voyager comes along and they want Voyager's help. And Voyager, taking up the cause, they realize, okay, yeah, absolutely, blah, 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 blah. They go to the home planet and, you know, kind of learn about this whole mystery. They uncover why these kids were abandoned. And then I didn't really get into huge details with this whole thing. I just kind of worked with abstractions where, I hate to go the very stereotypical Star Trek story route here, but, you know, obviously maybe they could have the citizens of this culture, this planet, realize the error of their ways, what they have done to so many countless children, and show them, hey, these are still beings of your world. They are worth something, and you can give them a purpose. Mm-hmm. It might not be as high up as other people, but you know what? Who cares? Let them live to their maximum potential, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And you could have some kind of commentary on just, you know, the disabled and that sort of thing, and how a lot of times we like to shove that under the rug and that sort of a thing. And it's kind of sad because, hey, they're people too. Mm-hmm. And they're not worthless. And a lot of times they do serve the community and they have full lives. Yeah. What's the harm in that?
But where is the, like, what's the crux of the story? Like, what's the plot of it? Like,
I don't know.
Okay, so you just have a concept for the kids. Okay, so, like...
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. I didn't have a really fully formed idea with this one. I, you know, for all of the rewrites that we have had, I struggled with this one the absolute most. Maybe because I was just that disinterested in Collective. And I don't completely know why. I mean, we've rewritten some very difficult episodes before. And I've done fine with it, but this one, man, I've been drawing a blank all week.
Well, let's run with that. Okay, so let's take your idea and let's just prune it a little bit and like push it forward a little bit. So where do they find the kids? Like, are they on the outskirts of the planet? Like, they're in their own, like are they in a cave? Are they in a house that they found? You know, like do they have their own community? They're on a ship?
They're on a ship that's basically just adrift. And we could even go so far as to say there's another nearby civilization who takes these ships and shoots them for them. Maybe they've got some backdoor deal, or maybe they just don't want space garbage. in their backyard, and so they take care of this for the other people.
Okay, so are these kids in trouble and do they need help from Voyager, or does Voyager get in trouble and they need help from these kids?
I think they just encounter one another. And the fact that these kids have been abandoned and they realize what has happened, they see Voyager and they contact Voyager.
Okay.
And start a dialogue. That's what happens.
Now, at the end of this plot, do the kids stay on Voyager or do they take them back to their home?
I figure it could go either way.
Is there a lesson learned? Like, do the society say, like, okay, yeah, thank you, Voyager, for giving us your Federation principles. We will take on these kids and change our society. Or do they say, screw you. You know, you're just an alien. You take them if you want them.
Yeah, okay. I think it's going to be a lot more interesting, actually, if we don't show how awesome the Federation is and have these people see the error of their ways. I take back what I said about that earlier. No. These guys are a-holes and they're never going to learn. Okay. Let's do that. And ultimately, these kids have nowhere else to go except to keep floating about in space. Maybe they could just keep going on this ship that they have and find a place to settle. They volunteer to do that. Let's say the kids do that. But then Voyager, maybe Janeway has so much compassion that she says, no, you know what? We will find a place for you on Voyager and you can come aboard. And we will educate you. We will train you. We will give you a place to stay. We'll make you work for it. But you can be a part of our crew if you so choose. And they decide to do it. Let's say that the goal of this episode is to get the kids on Voyager. If we absolutely have to freaking do it so that we can have an Echeb story later, fine. Okay, we'll do it. That's how we could do it.
Do you mind if I take your idea and maybe just tweak something and present it to you? Not saying you have to change
it. Yeah, no. I love when we do this. Do it.
All right, so here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking is that, like, I like your idea, and I like that they're out in space, and they kind of have their own community and everything like that. But let's shift it to, instead of being malformed or deformed or, you know, like have some sort of disease or something like that, let's make them perfectly normal in our eyes. I mean, not just, like, even though, like, people with malformities and deformities are normal, what I'm trying to say is that let's... Like, we don't even find anything wrong with them medically, and here's why. It's because they're mixed race. And you have two warring nations. You have two, maybe not warring, but you have two nations that dominate this planet. And they're two different species, and they co-evolved on the planet. And, which is very rare, as you know, like in Star Trek, it's very rare for two distinct kind of species to evolve, you know, at the same time. And they rise to the same level of technological whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it's completely taboo for their race to intermingle and intermarry and produce. And we've seen this in our, you know, world for centuries. Mm-hmm. But they take this to an extreme. They take it to an absolute extreme. If they find a child who is mixed race between these two alien races, they banish them. They kick them off the planet. And they do something to the parents. Maybe, I don't know, like they put the parents in jail or they kill the parents and they banish the kids. And to us, they look completely normal. But they're like, no, you don't understand. Like, we're not either. You know, like, so instead of making it a, like, people with disabilities have rights like us, it's people of mixed races are completely normal. And there's no such thing as pure breeds. And B'Elanna latches onto these kids instead of Seven.
Oh, hey, yeah, I like that. She would know better than anybody.
Yeah, and so it's not so much a maternal thing like they push it with Seven, but it's much more of a mentor type thing. It's a it's something where, like, I went through this and I know that you guys can do it too. And, you know, here's how we can help you, and, like, let's take you back to your planet and see what we can do. And Jane was like, no, we don't want to do this. That has nothing to do with us. Prime directive. This has nothing to do with us. Like, we'll take them back, but if they, but that's all that we can do. All we can do is just take them back. And if they reject them, they reject them. And so they go through this lengthy dialogue about how, you know, it's cool and all that business. What?
I think that's a big problem, though, unfortunately, because isn't that also kind of interfering with the affairs of the Prime Directive? I mean, if they've been rejected once, they're just going to get rejected again. What's the use of that?
They ask to be brought back. Like, their ship is damaged or they don't have any other place to go, and they say that, like, we want to make our case, we want to go back. And,
okay, and that's
because
compelling
enough. If they ask Janeway and crew for assistance, then that's when Janeway and crew can interfere.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so they want to go back to their home planet and say, look, we're okay. You know, they're making their case to stay.
Look what we've done. You know, like, look what we've accomplished on our own. We can be productive members of society, and they ultimately say no. And then that's when Voyager and crew and B'Elanna says, like, okay, well, you can come on our ship, and we can help you out, or you can travel with us until we can find you a new home or a new whatever.
Okay, cool. All right.
The only reason why I did that is just because of the B'Elanna connection.
Well, I know B'Elanna is constantly on your mind, so that makes sense. But no, that really fits so incredibly well, because most of B'Elanna's stories have been about her mixed heritage. And of course she would know all about this. I mean, the voices fight in her head every day. So that's actually very compelling. Now, the question I have for you is, okay, say that this is the episode. What happens from here? Do the kids eventually find a place to stay?
Yes, I feel like the kids find a place to stay. Maybe one person stays on, and it's Ichep, you know. And, like, he is super smart, and he develops that relationship with Seven just so we can get things back on track to how the show is supposed to progress, you know. And maybe this somehow that binds B'Elanna and Seven together in a little bit better way, because we never really saw that kind of a relationship, but they bond over Ichep. And the other kids, they find homes because there are people looking for children. I don't know.
They get adopted.
Yeah, they get adopted.
Yeah, maybe they encounter a really awesome civilization. They decide, oh, we love your cities, and we never get to see them or anything like that, a la the 37s, but it's totally cool, and they decide to stay.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of thing. No matte painting, no nothing. Just
nothing. We just have to brag about it for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Voyager consistency, everybody. Yeah, no, I think that's a better solution in and of itself than the episode Collective. And so even though this is a fairly abstract idea, this is not a detailed story. It's not as exquisite as we normally have done rewrites, but we still made this better.
And I haven't even talked about my idea.
I thought that was your idea.
No, that was just me leeching onto yours.
Oh, okay, fine. What is your idea?
My idea is, I'll keep it simple because we've gone on for a while now. It's like, my idea was, I tracked Collective much. I followed the track of Collective much more than you. Where, like, we keep the opening, same hostage scenario, same Delta Flyer poker scene, and it's just a lot of fun. But the thing is that I cut it down a little bit more to add more of the mystery component to it, and where you don't know what's going on right away, where, like, you find out really quick what's going on and what happened, and there's only five of them and everything like that. And so with my version is, there's still a lot of drones. There's not 5,000, but there's, say, dozens of drones, but they're actual drones. They don't speak, they don't really think all that much, and they're deformed and malfunctioning, and they're walking around like zombies and everything like that. But there's still a voice. Seven and crew and everything like that can still hear the voice. Like, what's going on? What's the driving? If they're disconnected from the collective, these drones, like, they tech the tech and find out these drones can receive orders, but they can't give them out. What is going on? You know, like, how are they even functioning right now? Because they're barely functioning. And the ship's technology is still working. Like, force fields are still working. Data nodes are still working. They can still fire. They can still use a tractor beam. So the real, like, it's still a threat and still a force, because the sheer technology of the Borg, the cube and its size, is still a threat to Voyager and the hostages. But they're nowhere near as organized as normal Borg, like in the like in the actual episode.
Yeah.
And so they can't figure it out. They're like, what is this new collective? Like, why are we still hearing the voice? And the voice kind of says stupid stuff. Like, it doesn't pronounce things correctly, or it doesn't act like a normal Borg cube, you know, just like in the episode. But the thing is, like, Seven goes through these trials and tries to fix everything like that, and like tries to, this is much more of an omnipotent force that she's trying to battle against, instead of one-on-one interaction with the kids. And so she instead of just trying to fix the cube, she's actually, like, she and Voyager and company are trying to break them out. And so there's a lot more action in it, where they actually, they kill the Borgs that are remaining, and they have to get inventive, because it's much more of a mob mentality. Instead of just organized, it's much more frantic. They're running faster than normal Borg. They're swiping their arms like swords, you know, like they're not like normal Borg. It's not like where they just go up and try to assimilate you. They are actually picking people up and throwing them around, but they have those dead eyes in their look. And so it's not quite zombies, but like it's a mix between Borg zombies and street thugs. And
okay.
And so and all of this is going on while they try to break out the crew, and you still have this omnipotent voice screaming at them in the Borg voice, but saying things that a Borg voice never would. And then so the whole episode goes through, and then at the very end, they find out that it's Icheb. And Icheb was the sole power behind this force, this cube. Like, he kind of became a new queen or something like that, or a temporary queen, because he was the only Borg that had a functioning mind that could have incoming and outgoing messaging or something like that, you know, like tech to tech. And so he had the responsibility to control the Borg, but he didn't have the maturity to do it in the proper way. Also, he was dealing with deformed Borgs and malformed Borgs and everything like that. And so Seven finds him, and he just kind of breaks down. He's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't handle this anymore. I can't control this many people. And so he has a breakdown. He releases the hostages, and Seven has a one-on-one conversation with him, real heart-to-heart. And so it's kind of a man behind the curtain kind of situation.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And so this, we're like, oh wow, it's just this one kid. It's just this one malformed, underdeveloped Borg. And then they bring Icheb over to the ship. And so the storyline, you know, is back to normal, but it's just Icheb this time.
Okay.
And that's kind of how my storyline goes.
Okay. So you would keep it a Borg story, kind of keep, I don't know, is Seven going to play babysitter to Icheb? Are they going to have their bond still?
There's still going to be that bond. It's still going to be, but like I said about with B'Elanna and your story, once I tweaked your story, it's much more of a mentorship instead of something maternal. Like, maybe he's a little bit older than Icheb. Like, maybe he's in his 20s instead of his teens. And I don't know. I mean, like, it's just, when we rewrite an episode, it's hard for us. Like, we can't rewrite the entire rest of the show. You know,
yeah.
So I'm trying to not be selfish and say, like, okay, we're going to get rid of this episode so that nothing happens like it did in season 6 and 7.
Right, right.
So I'm trying to kind of bring it back on track. And so, I guess things would stay the same so that you can keep the storylines. The only thing that would be different is, like, the little girl and the two twins wouldn't be there, which wouldn't be that big of a change for the rest of the show.
No, not really. We would miss out on what? Maybe some ghost stories and a science fair.
And that's it. That is it.
I think we can cut that as a good loss.
Yeah. And so, but this way you have Icheb becomes a much more tortured character, and kind of what Seven was 2 years ago. But, you know, maybe he keeps it a little bit longer, and it's a little bit different dynamic because he's arguing with another Borg, not another human.
Well, and you know what? If you made Icheb just a shred older, I think he and Seven would have that much more in common, and the mentorship role would mean a lot more, just because, like you just said, Seven was in this place not that long ago.
Yeah.
And the two could still grow a lot together, because Seven is by no means actualized. She's still on this journey, too. She's just a few steps ahead.
Yes, but the thing is, though, is that we'd have to be wary of reproducing Seven. Like, we wouldn't want to another Seven. I mean, I think that's why the kids worked, I guess kind of worked, even though we didn't like them, is that they were still young and innocent and naive. They didn't have the tortured past or feelings like Seven did, because the writers didn't want just, oh, here's Scorpion again. You know, like...
Yeah, but you could totally retwist it, though, having those two work through things together.
Yes.
And I don't know, maybe Icheb could have a slightly even darker perspective.
Right.
I don't know, there's other ways that you could twist it, but by and large, I mean, you're going to kind of hit the reset button on this thing, and just to keep things going as they did. So
right.
okay, yeah, so be it. That's a complete episode. And it's still way more interesting than Collective.
Well, there you go. Those are our two aspects and our two rewrites of Collective. You ditch the Borg storyline. I kind of trim it down. And either way, I feel like you have something a little bit more interesting than Collective.
Yeah, yeah, I think we win. Not too bad for struggling all week to try and come up with this. But rewriting Collective isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
This episode isn't very good, but...
Are we just going to pin all of our choices?
You pretty much have to. But the thing about this episode, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, I think, is it's a crazy idea.
Earl Grey.
Picard, can you construct a rudimentary lathe?
Go for its weak spot. It's an energy being. It doesn't have a vulnerable spot. Get off the line, the Forge.
The Orb.
Or we could just blame it on Janeway somehow, you know, that she scared the Borg into the Gamma Quadrant because they were tired of dealing with her in the Delta Quadrant. I don't know.
To the journey!
Because this is the dangers, by the way, kids, of having babies in the 24th century. Because if Kathy's first word was coffee and she was standing next to the replicator, the next thing you know, you have a hyped up 2-year-old.
The Ready Room.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you've got your lucky shirt when you're watching a football game and your team won when you were wearing it. So now you have to wear it every time. That's also the Enterprise insignia. That's the insignia of the only ship whose crew didn't die.
Yeah.
So
just wear
course,
it on the right color shirt. That's all.
That's right.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And then he turns to her and he says, who is that man that I was just hugging? And she says, that was William Shatner. And he's like, who?
Literary Treks.
Well, you know, I'm really a fan of a lot of, you know, different kinds of, you know, naval fiction. You know, C.S. Forrester, Horatio Hornblower, those novels.
So good.
You know, Patrick O'Brien, you know, the Master and Commander books. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all things which sort of put me into the right mindset.
The 602 Club.
So when we come kind of to the story here, and especially off of doing Literary Treks where we talk about Michael Piller's book Fade In, kind of got behind the scenes of Insurrection and really seeing how that story changed. To me, it really just exemplified the importance of story in a movie.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on virtually any platform where you can get podcasts these days. None of them are possible without the help of our sponsor. So here's a little blip about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
We would also like to thank our associate producers who have become subscribers on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and check this out. It's basically a monthly subscription that many fans have now donated to. There's various levels of contribution. So whether it's $1 or $100 every month, that helps us out greatly because we are now essentially a fan-supported network. This is what's keeping us going. And so we appreciate every little bit that we can do. Our associate producers for TTJ are Kenneth Tripp and Lisa Stevens. You can follow Lisa at Flip18 on Twitter. Please give her a follow and tell her that she is awesome for supporting TTJ and the network. Now, next week, we have to take a week off because you're going to take out the Delta Flyer once again for an away mission. I hope you can bring it back as scratch-free as you did last time. So we'll have to wait and see because you're piloting. I'm counting on you here.
I've been brushing up on my skills in the holodeck, so it should be okay. But I think we have a very interesting topic, fan-submitted topic, for the week after that.
Yes, we do. And what are we doing?
What we're doing is, it was a fancy minute topic, and it was about a what-if scenario. And Shar and I love what-if scenarios. We love thinking about what could have been, what happened if this happened, or how would the show progress if this just one little change happened. This isn't a little change, though. This is a big change. Mm-hmm. And that change is, what if Janeway died at some point? What would the show be like? And so whether she died in season one or season six or somewhere in between, what would happen to the Voyager crew? Would they get home? How would the command structure change? How would the relationship change? What would happen? And that's what you and I are going to talk about, but you'll have to wait until next week to hear it.
That's right. And so until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!